Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
Dr. Scripture, we're in the midst of our annual calendar giveaway, and as a result of all the people writing in to request their free calendar, we've been getting a lot of very encouraging feedback from listeners, and you've received several questions as well.
Yes, Scott, and I want to take this time to sincerely thank everyone who has shared with us what the Scripture on Creation program means to them. The response has been almost overwhelming. You know, Scott, since we don't see our audience, it's easy to forget. And I know this will sound a little strange, but it is easy to forget that a lot of people are listening and being impacted by what we say as this program is broadcast across the country.
Yeah, we just sit here and look at each other. You know, we don't see the various people who are out there listening.
Yeah, so when we do get so many comments from listeners, it's an eye-opener, it's humbling, and it's very encouraging. And so we remain dedicated to promoting the glory of God as it's declared in Scripture and displayed in creation.
Now, Dr. Scripture, there are way too many letters to share from on this program, but there was one comment from a listener that we felt was really special. And it's because it indicates that one of the specific goals you and I have is being accomplished through how we interact on the show, in a kind of give and take, as well as a question and answer format.
I think I know what letter you're referring to, Scott. Do you want to read it?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
It's from Jeffrey in Augusta, Georgia, and he said, quote, "I look forward to listening to the show every Friday on GNN Radio. What a great set of men, Scott Kump and Dr. Ben Scripture. Listening to the show is almost like being a part of the conversation. I love the insight of Dr. Scripture and regret when I occasionally miss the show. I know I could listen online, but I don't often do that," end quote. So I'd like to say, Jeffrey, your words are too kind, but if we are able to get you to feel like you're part of the show, we're extremely gratified to know that what we're doing is working.
At least with some of our audience.
Yeah.
And let me say, don't be hesitant about going to the website to hear programs you've missed, or even to listen to it again. We might say something worth hearing again now and then. So we want to thank everyone who has written in to ask for a calendar and has given their feedback. And I mean this sincerely. We welcome all your comments. Constructive criticism is a very helpful thing in a medium like ours, and it keeps us from deceiving ourselves into thinking we really do have it all together and know just about all there is to know about creation in the Bible. I so want to have the mindset that what's important is not what I think or say, but what Scripture says. So please, we covet your comments, observations, and suggestions.
And love those questions, which is what we should get to now, don't you think, Dr. Scripture?
I do.
So you received a letter with a question from Eric Bruce, who writes from Covington, Georgia. Quote, "During the flood, when the firmament was broken up and the continents shifted and land masses moved, what was the force or cause of this great movement? I know the default answer was that God caused it, but was there a natural physical force that moved them?" End quote.
Okay, so I thank Eric for his letter, and his question is basically addressed by some creation models which attempt to explain the cause and after effects of the global flood that's described in Genesis chapters 6 through 9. The three main models proposed by creationists are the vapor canopy model, the catastrophic plate tectonics model, and the hydroplate model.
And Dr. Scripture, you've discussed all of these models at various times in past programs.
Yes, I have. So at this point, I'm not going to go into details of each model or compare their differences. What I want to do is glean from each of them aspects which overlap and address Eric's question. And what is very important to keep in mind from a creationist perspective is that much of what the creation models propose for the flood is not revealed in Scripture. In other words, scientific observation is being applied to what Scripture does reveal, and a plausible scenario is then developed to explain what, why, and how the flood did what it did to the earth. So, with that in mind, Let's first set the biblical framework, which all three of these creation models build upon to explain the flood and its consequences. First, we're assuming a global flood based on a simple, literal interpretation of the flood account. Second, we're assuming the majority of the Earth's topography and the sedimentary layers observed throughout the crust of the Earth are mainly the result of the Great Flood. And third, as Eric described it, we assume that God caused the flood to occur. However, the results of the flood were due to physical forces of nature, which God created in the beginning and put in place to control the processes of the physical realm. That's the laws of physics, chemistry, mechanics, etc. So another way to say that is we are assuming God caused the flood or initiated the commencement of the forces resulting in the flood, but we do not assume that God was continually performing supernatural acts throughout the process of the flood to accomplish the results we observe today.
So, for example, these explanations don't include the idea that to make a flood, God simply created a whole bunch of water that covered the earth and then uncreated it or whisked it away by another miracle to get rid of it, leaving the oceans and continents like they are now.
That's right. And we can assert that because the Bible doesn't explain it that way. Listen to what it says, starting in Genesis chapter 7, verse 6. Now Noah was 600 years old when the flood of water came upon the earth. Then Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him entered the ark because of the water of the flood. Then verse 10, and it came about after the 7 days that the water of the flood came upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened, and the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Thus we see the Bible reveals the source of the water, and it describes it as though both from underground and from the sky, the water was already there. So, the inundation by the water, the erosion, the stratification, and that means the formation of layers of sediment, the settling of land and water, and a lot more, were all the result of nature obeying physical laws. The thing is, we must hypothesize several things. For example, what the topography of the earth was like before the flood, because the Bible simply doesn't describe it in any detail. But given it was a global flood, and given the universal stratification of the crust of the earth, we assume virtually the entire geology of the earth is due to the flood. The ocean basins, the mountain ranges, the extent and shapes of the continents are all a result of the effects of the flood. So a crucial question is, did the earth just have one great continent before the flood?
That's the Pangaea idea.
Correct. And though the Bible doesn't describe it precisely that way, there is, we think, enough evidence on the earth to warrant the possibility of a single continent on earth, Pangaea, which was broken apart when the great deep burst open. And that idea of continents being formed out of one giant continent seems to be Eric's understanding. Remember he said, quote, when the firmament was broken up and the continents shifted and land masses moved, what was the force or cause of this great movement, unquote. Now, I do want to clarify something, and that is, what was the firmament? The King James Version uses the word firmament. The New American Standard Bible and NIV use the word expanse to translate the Hebrew word rakia, which God creates on the second day of creation. Now, is the rakia, or firmament, a landmass that was broken up? There is some difference of opinion about that among many creationists. However, I'll just express my understanding, and it's this. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 8, reading from the King James Version, it says, and God called the firmament heaven. Now, there's no way that heaven ever refers to land. So according to how the Bible describes the firmament, or the expanse, I don't think we can say the firmament was the source of the land masses that form our continents today. However, that does not mean the land God caused to appear on day 3 of creation did not break apart and form the continents of today. I just would not say the firmament broke apart. Let's say the land broke apart. But now, how could masses of land the size of continents move over the span of about 1 year to where they are today? What forces could possibly move them?
Well, Dr. Scripture, given what we observe today, I can see why some may just assume that God had to perform a miracle and put the land masses where they are today during the flood. Is there a plausible way they could have moved according to the physical laws we're familiar with?
That is the question, Scott, and its answer is the answer to Eric's question.
So?
So, both the catastrophic tectonics plate model and the hydroplate model propose ways that the great continent created by God during the creation week could have broken apart, divided into several continental land masses, and rapidly moved to the positions they are in today. Now, they both have certain thermodynamic problems. However, both give possible explanations to overcome the energetic problems presented by such colossal movements.
Well, I remember you doing a whole series on the hydroplate model, and you seemed to think that it had a lot of valid proposals to overcome the objections to rapid continental movements.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't the major objections related in particular to the amount of heat energy that would be released as a result of such massive movements? The idea being the energy released would cause the Earth to get too hot for liquid water to exist, let alone for any life to survive?
That's right. And I do think the hydroplate model has a lot of merit for those reasons. Its proposal is basically that the original continent was essentially floating on the waters of the deep, as the Bible describes that source of underground water, both on day one and by deduction on day three. So when, as described in Genesis 7:11, the fountains of the great deep burst open, that water, which was under extreme pressure, came gushing up and out due to the compression by the land mass on top of it. And the movement of that super pressurized water caused an enormous amount of erosion of land along the fissures throughout the massive floating continent, the result being the breakup and separation of the one continent into many, and the movement by sliding on the water layer below to positions distant from one another. Now, I know that that description is extremely simplistic, but the hydroplate model also includes thermodynamic calculations and other mathematical proposals involving the physics, mechanics, and hydrodynamics of the events. All disciplines that I must admit I'm not versed in, but the model attempts to take into account all those forces as we understand them. And by applying these principles as we understand them, the hydroplate model supposedly has taken physical law into account and satisfied at least a good number of scientists who do understand these things thoroughly.
So it sounds like, to answer Eric's question, was there a natural force that moved the continents? If I understand what you've explained, Dr. Scripture, the force or forces were gravity and pressure, friction and mechanics, certainly on a massive scale, but the same physical phenomenon that are at work in the world today, right?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Scott. So let's conclude by reading how Noah experienced it. In Genesis 7, 11, and 12, it says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened, and the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights." And that's not what I say, that's what Scripture says.